I want to welcome you all to our afternoon session entitled Putting It Together, Customizing Your PM Approach with Tailoring. We have Tim Mowinney here presenting for us. Tim has over 25 years of private sector, Big Four, and other experience implementing and managing information technology systems and solutions. He has led numerous engagements dealing with strategic technology initiatives, such as IT organization design and process improvement, IT risk management, governance, data and system development. Since 2008, Tim has been a part-time instructor at Georgia State University's Robinson College of Business, teaching the MBA course Managing and Using Information Systems. Tim is a certified PMP. He joined CDC in 2008 and is currently an IT project manager with NCIRD. Tim holds a master's in computer science from the New Jersey Institute of Technology and a BA in economics from Rutgers University. So please help me welcome Tim, please.
Thank you very much. Yes, New Jersey has an Institute of Technology as well. This presentation topic it came up in a conversation, actually lunch that I was having with Peggy Joyner. I'm sure she's out there somewhere. She's right there. And basically what the conversation was about is in a prior life, Coopers & Lybrand, which became PricewaterhouseCoopers, we had an IT project management delivery system called Summit. You know, interestingly enough, same names here. And it existed for the same reason, I think, largely that EPL exists, and that was to provide better assurance that the projects we undertook, we were successful with from a client perspective and from the delivery organization as well. And Summit had a really interesting concept in that you could create, they had templated route paths, and I see we have templated route paths through EPLC, which is great. I think since my lunch with Peggy, that's been introduced. Thank you very much. Okay, that was my idea. And then with the Summit methodology, what we would do is we would run one of these based on the client situation, based on the nature of the engagement, you know, the context in which we're doing it, we would generate a starting core breakdown structure and effects and sample deliverables and those sorts of things. And then from there, we would further tailor it, all again with the idea of providing greater assurance that it would meet the client and firm needs. So I'm excited about the idea that EPLC is moving more and more. It's always part of EPLC, but we're doing more to make it actionable, if you will. So to start this off, I went out and basically looked at a standard definition of what tailoring is, and you know, certainly the one that I've highlighted there, the third one, is probably most closely aligned, and that is we're taking our framework, our project management delivery approach, and we're talking about adopting it for a particular end or purpose. And as I looked at this, I thought, well, even the first one makes sense. We're not actually making clothing here, but we're trying to tailor something specific to the requirements or maybe the measurements or the metrics or the KPIs of a particular engagement. And then I thought even the second one made sense. If we're not successful with delivering our projects or they run over quality or they're just unsuccessful, we might find ourselves making our own clothes. So I thought that one made sense as well. So what is tailoring? I should have marked my clock here. So what does tailoring involve? It generally involves waiving particular life cycle phases, activities, or deliverables based on, again, the specific requirements at hand. You notice it says waiving. Generally, what that suggests is you're starting with a framework, something that exists, and you're tailoring it. You're not starting bottom-up, making it up as you go along. You're starting with the framework, and you're deciding from that framework what you're going to do. The benefit there is everything kind of looks the same. It follows the same model, in effect. And you know by removing something, it's a conscious action. You're making a decision yourself, your stakeholders, to remove something. We'll talk more about that in a bit. Waiving also suggests that you're removing things. It doesn't have to be. You could actually, as part of the tailoring, you could add components to it. And again, you know, I make this point that you know any SDLC, EPLC certainly, its purpose in life is to act as a control, to provide better assurance, to provide management assurance that you're going to be successful with this engagement. So you might, based on the context, actually add items. And then the other bullet here is, when do you do that? You don't do it when you're deep into implementation and decide you don't have enough budget or time to do the rest of the project, so you start waiving things. It's actually done at the beginning of the project. I think everybody knows that. And it's done through a formal agreement, this project process agreement, which, again, I'll talk more about. I don't know if anybody's heard this book. The local PMI chapter had the author in who wrote this book, The Alpha Project Managers. I'm not sure. Show of hands, if anybody read that book? So nobody really. It's a great book. And what basically what the author did is they went out and they surveyed all sorts of project managers, their stakeholders, and came up with the dimensions that kind of really make the best of the best stand out. And one of them, interestingly enough, is the amount of time. It's really great. It is a great read. And it's short and easy to get through and some great statistics. But the bottom line for one of the dimensions was the planning phase. The alpha project managers, the best of the best, spend more time in planning. And one of the things they're doing in planning is this. They're tailoring the approach, you know, given the specifics of that engagement. I just came from a presentation by Teresa Kinley. She talked about alternatives analysis. That's something that's done early on. Smart project managers spend more time doing those kinds of activities early as opposed to trying to justify them later in the life cycle. So that's basically tailoring. The concept is, or how you execute against that, is on the left-hand side, you've got this project process agreement. I think most have seen that. You can go out through the CDC Unified Process site. You can pull down the template. And it's a formal document. And it's an agreement. And the agreement is between the delivery organization and the organization that's the sponsoring organization, the folks who have the money to do this. And it's an agreement that across the EPLC phases, we are going to do or not do specific phases. We're going to perform certain activities. We're going to perform and create certain deliverables, or we're not. Or we might tailor how we're going to do one. We might add more rigor to one. We might make, based on the nature of the engagement, we might apply less rigor to something. But it's a conscious going through with all parties and deciding how we're going to do this. Again, it's done early. It's not done later in the game. And what does that drive? That drives everything. It drives, you see up here, it drives certainly your work breakdown structure, it drives your project plan, it's going to drive your deliverables, it's going to drive the resourcing you need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it really is kind of the Rosetta Stone, if you will, for everything that follows after that. I actually did read, or skimmed, I should say, the Federal IT Management Reform document. I skimmed it well. I think you can make the case that there's a mandate to tailor. I just came from a presentation. Jack Paul talked about, one of the objectives behind the cloud computing is to kind of bring together or more closely the beginnings of a project, the inception of it, and the conclusion of it. And, cloud computing is perceived as one way to do that. But the reform plan clearly speaks to things like deliver smaller, more manageable chunks. Deliver them more quickly. And that generally equates, for most people, doesn't have to, but generally equates to less risk. And if you consider EPLC as really control to help manage risk, well, then you probably are going to want to do a little less of something. Not always, but that's the fun part of project managing, kind of crafting what it is that you have to do that's going to accomplish what you need. The mandate, the Federal IT Management Reform Program speaks about introducing best practices. I would suggest, based on my past life, it was a best practice. The route paths and the tailoring that we did, we at the end of the day, the firm had to make money and the client had to pay us. And that wasn't going to be true if we screwed it up. And so it was a best practice. I know it works that way. I know it works well. And then improving resource utilization. If you're doing really just what you need to do to accomplish the end goal, you're not spinning your wheels doing things that don't add significant value or reduce risk commensurate with what you spent to do it. I will say also that EPLC itself, tailoring is a prominent component of that. It's mentioned, I was going to count it, got to do it, but there's a section on tailoring and you can see references throughout it. And I think at the end of the day, it's just intuitive. It makes good sense. This is, again, the alpha project managers, this is where they spend their time, just not kind of routine following steps. They've crafted exactly what needs to get done. Along the same line, the tailoring, specific things you're going to factor into determining what that tailoring consists of, you're going to want to consider, obviously, we just kind of talked about that, size, schedule are going to suggest certain tailoring. In fact, I did get a copy of, I see we do now have a small project. We've got a micro EPLC framework. That's wonderful. It's exactly what this had in mind. A risk, the same thing. Again, the control exists. EPLC exists to help manage risk. If there's less risk or more risk, you're going to want to tailor the approach based on that. Acquisition strategy, how could that influence? I see we have an EPLC framework now for COTS. I happen to be on the VTRAX project, and I can tell you that's a heavy COTS implementation. And if you look at the way we move forward with that and the plans, It's a blending, if you will, of the, in this case, it's SAP, their delivery framework, ASAP, with, I'm not sure ASAP's an appropriate acronym, but, and then the other was, you know, EPLC, so you kind of joined the two of those. No, there was no editorial comment there at all. The other thing that, and I actually got this from HHS guidance, I didn't make this stuff up, the other thing is scope of influence. If you're doing a project that is for a business unit, or if you're doing a project for the enterprise, obviously scope of influence, risk, everything else is going to, should be represented in your approach going forward. For example, disaster recovery, you may not spend as much time if it's for a small business unit as you would if it was for enterprise. But that all kind of speaks to risk and why we have EPLC to begin with. The last thing is, you don't tailor something just because you don't want to do a particular activity. I suspect that happens too often. Again, it's a formal agreement. The delivering organization, the sponsoring organization, you as the project manager formally go into this and decide based on these things. It's really a business decision. The following things cannot be waived. As I sort the new frameworks, I see that business needs not prominent in some of them anymore, but I would suggest business need up there isn't the document business need, but it really is a business need. You know, you have to have, if you're going to move forward, you have to have a compelling business case, otherwise why are you doing it? You've got to have an organization that has clear business need, they have the funding to do it, they understand what the commitment means, and all of that, whether that's in a business need statement or whether that's in a charter, at the end of the day, you can't waive that. The other thing you can't waive is clear and adequate requirements, functional and non-functional. There's all sorts of ways of delivering on a project. There's more iterative ways, agile. In fact, there's an agile framework now, I see. Regardless of how you do it and what form those requirements take, you've got to have clear requirements. I don't know if anybody ever heard of or read anything about the Winchester House. That was the house that was built without any sense of architecture, and there's stairways going every which way. I've seen systems like that. You know, you have to have, you know, there has to be at some point, you know, things have to settle down, and there's got to be a clear set of requirements. The other thing you have to have is that, Jeff Bull talked about enterprise architecture. Suzette Gardner spoke at that at the lunchtime thing. I'm going to try to mention everybody's name that I possibly can while I'm up here. This way, if this fails, everybody's involved. And why is that important? You know, clearly, what he talked about, Jeff Bull, that's going to happen earlier and with more rigor. Because without that, more and more duplicative stuff comes into the environment. And everybody sees that. That's probably the most important thing, and you can't waive that. Though too often it is waived, or it's given a perfunctory sort of attention. There's a great book out there, referenced in the book, Enterprise Architecture as Strategy. And the fellow that wrote that, I can't think of his name right now, Peter Wheel, I think it was. But he spoke to that step, absence of that step, is what contributes more to complexity and risk in an organization than anything else. You know, you wind up with five of something, and then you wind up with more interfaces and a brittle architecture, only because that step's not performed well. Adequate testing, I think that goes without saying. You can't skip testing. And then lastly, appropriate O&M documentation. That would be tantamount to, you know, buying a car and having no plans to ever maintain it or change the oil. It would be an absolute waste of everybody's money. So these are the things, regardless of how they manifest themselves in a deliverable, these are the things as a project manager, you know, you've got to have well thought out, understood and agreed to. Otherwise you're in trouble out of the gate. How am I doing on time? Get close. Every presentation I give has an obligatory reference to COVID, and this is it. COVID stands. How many folks are familiar with COVID? There you go. That's great. COVID, I think, is a pretty good model. It stands for Control Objectives for Business Information Technology. I think it stands for. And so what COVID is it's got a controls orientation, obviously, to it, but it's a large, broad IT process model. And because it's an IT process model, it deals with project management, program management, and those sorts of activities. And as such, it intersects with PMBOK. Everyone knows what that is. And it also intersects with EPLC. So with the mandate to introduce best practices, I'm introducing a best practice. And COVID, it in many ways, serves the same purposes as an EPLC. It acts as a control so the management has better assurance that at the end of the day, IT is going to be run well and the projects that IT undertakes will be successful. And it has the same concept of tailoring that it has, and actually make reference to PO 10.2 and PO 10.3. It makes reference to you should have a project management framework. We have one. You should tailor from that your project management approach. It's exactly what we're talking about. My little things on the side there, you all have a big toolbox. This is Peggy's metaphor, so give her credit. You got a toolbox, and it's rich with tools. You really have to be smart about which ones you're going to bring to bear on that particular project. And it's as simple as that. But and if, by the way, if you do look at COVID, my little COVID plug, you will find underneath this a lot of descriptions about the control objectives, these, and more. You will also find key performance metrics that you might want to track for these activities. You'll find a maturity model that you can actually look at to see how good you're at. You know, at least consider how well you're performing against these sorts of processes. And then I think I have one last slide. I had a couple of, this is it for me, two parting words from two very smart people. Warren Buffett, risk comes from not knowing what you're doing. And I think that's right. And you can have the best, you know, risk framework in the world. You know what you're doing. You're in trouble. And I think where that comes to bear is, you know, take that intelligence, and much of it's embodied in the framework and all the people in this room, colleagues of yours, you can tap, you know, plan the approach carefully. And that's really the fun part. It's really a business exercise. It's a business management exercise. And the other thing is this quote by Winston Churchill, this report by its very length defends itself against the risk of being read. How many have gotten a document that, hey, it conforms to EPLC that is unintelligible? It can't be read. And the point that I want to make, and this is a personal point, if it isn't clear, then it's not a good control. If a business person can't open it and understand what this represents in terms of requirements document, then it fails miserably as a control. I would suggest it fails worse than not having it, because it gives you the semblance that you have a control. So those are my parting words. That's it. Any questions?